All right, is everyone in the right place? Okay, this is, how do you know if your church is growing? I just want you to know this material is designed to persecute the saints, not to comfort the afflicted. It more is designed to afflict the comfortable, so I hope you're in the right place. What I'd like to do is I would like to share an introduction with you of a new resource that I have out called Measuring Church Growth, a research-based tool for evaluating and planning. I hope you find it a very helpful tool, and we'll give you some insight about it. Before I get started, I want to give you a quote from Mack Lynn that, to me, is an alarming quote, and see if you've seen it or even noticed it, okay? This comes from his latest book, Churches of Christ in the United States, 1997. Now, Mack compiles this, and many of us use it in churches just as a directory, right? But have you read the introduction? Here's what he had to say on page 13. Statistics appear to indicate that a slight decline has begun in the number of members and adherents within Churches of Christ in the United States. The exclusion of the discipling ministry churches, now the International Churches of Christ, from the directory in 1994 accounts for some of the loss. However, since 1994, a numerical decline seems to have begun. Now that, to me, is an alarming comment. An observation. I have no reason to doubt that he is right on. I talked to Mack, and I asked him, I said, Mack, I haven't heard anyone say anything about this. I mean, everyone is just quiet about it. Have you heard anything? I mean, you'll listen to a lot of sessions, and you probably never will hear this comment made concerning this observation, making a comment on it. Well, he responded and said, well, John, probably a partial reason is that we're in denial. And that could be true. Maybe we're really in denial. We don't want to face the fact as a body we may have started a decline. But let me share with you another partial reason that we have not taken notice. In many cases, churches do not know if they're experiencing healthy conditions or unhealthy conditions. Yes, a church will know our attendance is a little better or a little worse than last year. Our contribution's a little better or a little worse. But I'm talking about conditions far more advanced than that, far more deeper in analysis than that, that can reflect real trends that can be just around the corner, different than what you just see on the surface. What churches are in need of, and I'm serious about this, in desperate need of, is an effective feedback system. A system that can give accurate information so we can keep a pulse on the life of the church. Almost everything you can think of in life has a feedback system. I mean, consider a machine, like an automobile. Consider an organization, like IBM. Or consider an organism, like the human body. All of these have feedback systems that help us read the situation and maintain a homeostatic stasis, a healthy balance in that system. Imagine just for a moment what it would be like if you drove a car without an instrument panel. Just imagine, take away your instrument panel, what would it be like? You'd constantly be wondering, am I about to run out of gas? Wouldn't you? You'd be wondering, I wonder if my engine is overheating. I wonder if the oil pressure, you know, is okay. And on we could go. Well, let me tell you, an incident happened to me somewhat like that. I had an instrument panel, but I got in my car going from Houston to Memphis. And I had 100 things on my mind, and I'm just driving, and for 6 hours, I don't think about anything concerning checking the basics. And I came to myself. After about 6 hours, I was on I-30 just past Arkadelphia, Arkansas, and I decided, I haven't checked my gas gauge. And I looked down, and listen, it wasn't on empty, folks. It was already so far past empty, it was out of sight. It was in the panic zone. And that's what I did. I literally panicked. Have you ever done that? And all these scenarios going through your mind. I'm going to stop right here, run out of gas on the road. I'm going to have to walk a long ways or hitchhike. I'm going to have to leave my belongings in the car. I'm going to have to some way or another get gas back. I'm going to be late. No. You go. All right? Well, in a sense, that's what happens in churches on occasion. I say on occasion because It doesn't happen all the time, but basically we move from one instance to another, from one situation to another, from one fire to another. We put out this fire, we put out that fire. Rather than basically dealing proactively with the issues of ministry and health, we deal reactively as these things kind of surface and come up on us. And if we just had a good, effective feedback system, we could then deal proactively. And the good news is we do. And hopefully we're going to provide that for you. Throughout these sessions, you'll probably hear a fellow named John Maxwell mentioned. John Maxwell has proven to be an outstanding leader in ministry and a popular author. In a book entitled Developing the Leader Within You, here's what he has to say. Chapter 5, page 81. A test of a leader is the ability to recognize a problem before it becomes an emergency. Under excellent leadership, a problem seldom reaches gigantic proportions because it's recognized, fixed in its early stages. And then he lists several steps to follow. Step 3, gather the data. Step 5, define the problem. Hopefully when you leave here, you'll have some insight in exactly what you can do to take those kinds of steps to deal proactively with the ministry that the Lord has given you. So I'm going to introduce Measuring Church Growth. But I want you to know this is a how-to book. This is not an easy reading, inspirational kind of book. Even though I hope it will give you some inspiration, the first two chapters deal with the biblical foundations of using numbers, keeping records. You'd be surprised how much Scripture has to say in the Old Testament and the New Testament about record-keeping and numbers. And it deals with the criticisms that people will throw out at you about being concerned about numbers. I'll give you some responses that I think will put it in a biblical perspective, that you'll have a healthy look on this thing. And then what it does for you, it shows you how to collect data, how to graph your data that's available as the feedback system. But here's what it does that no resource that, to my knowledge, provides. You graph it, it shows you how to interpret the data. I don't know of another resource, and it came as my surprise as I was doing the research and the writing, that no book provided this information for you. And I'll give you some insight, just some introduction to it. And it also gives you research based on 112 Churches of Christ. I divided them into different sizes, you'll see in a moment, and I lumped them between growing and declining. And so we have the data that's statistically significant between the growing and declining. So you can take your data and compare yourself to other Churches of Christ in a growing or declining trend. Do you think that could be helpful? Certainly that would be a good measure to determine where are we in terms of our health. Okay, let me start with a line graph. If you're familiar with data at all, you're probably familiar with a line graph. And by the way, all of our examples will come from actual case studies. I work full-time with the Center for Church Growth in Houston. I do a great deal of diagnostic evaluation work with churches, and they provide me an immense amount of data. I keep this data, and I'm able to use it in analysis purposes and also show you actual examples. So these are actual churches that I drew this information from. Here's a congregation. What you do is you average for 52 weeks, and then you plot each year the average in assembly attendance and in Bible class attendance, and then determine your membership at the end of the year. And so when you put them on your graph, put the lines, you've got a line graph analysis. All right? The point that's valuable for you to note in this is that 10 years and 5 years are helpful to develop a trend. All right? And you will notice that to get 10 years of data, a decadal growth trend takes 11 pieces of data. From 87 to 97 is 11 pieces of data because you're looking at the change over 10 years. And so 5 years would take 6 pieces of data. Trend is set in 10 clearly, but it's also set in 5. So within a 10-year or decadal growth pattern, you may see several changes. Okay? Now, I know it's late, and I'll probably just get you to nod a little bit. And please, if I am not clear in any of this, but it's very easy this for me at this late time. I may be running way off track and I'm not being clear. So you just raise your hand and say, wait a minute, explain that. I will stop and clarify. Everybody comfortable with that? So I may look for a little confirmation that you're with me. All right. So as you take a look at this, here is the data. It probably doesn't look very interesting, but imagine this is your church's data. put yourself in this data, and then you might find something interesting here. This tells you what happened. It doesn't tell you why it happened. Now you need interpretive tools to surface the areas that need to be applied with the diagnostic whys. And why is this happening or why is that happening? I'm going to share with you two interpretive tools that will indicate potential concerns as you look at them, or it may indicate some healthy conditions, and there'll also be points in which it'll make you start saying why. Okay? The two will be the relationship between the assembly attendance and membership, that's one, and the relationship between the assembly attendance and membership. These are two predictive tools. The ideal scenario in the first one, the relationship between the assembly and the membership, is this. Your membership should be lower than your assembly attendance, or your assembly attendance should be higher than your membership. Your members would be baptized members, mostly adults with some children. But your assembly attendance ought to be members, members' children, and visitors. So the ideal scenario is where the membership is lower than the assembly attendance. And when you have that situation, you have a healthy situation. And when that reverses, you have a major red flag concern that you need to deal with. Yes?
Define membership.
Baptized members. Active baptized members. Resident members, too. And I go into detail in describing that for you in the book. But it does not include the baptized members' unbaptized children. It only includes the children that are baptized. So it will be mostly adults with some young people. Okay? Now, here's a church that had an ideal scenario. It had, notice, an assembly attendance, y'all see this, greater than the membership, until this point right here. As soon as this gap begins to close, and especially if it crosses over, it's a red flag. You've got problems. It says you need to start asking diagnostic whys. Don't wait till the engine boils over. Because what it says is, we have members not actively involved in the life of this church. What is happening in terms of the programming? Do you have adequate programming that it takes to basically support and involve this number of people? Tomorrow night I'll share with you the four major areas that research has shown that's the most important ministry areas in Churches of Christ. The research was in Clear Choices for Churches, but we'll cover it for you. We'll share exactly the four major areas tomorrow so that you'll know where you'll find most of the problems surfacing. Okay, if it's not the programming, do you have adequate staff to support the program? Do you have space available for supporting that members? You know, I go into churches, and I say, John, we're not growing. I don't understand it. And I'll just go out and look in the parking lot after churches begin, and there's no place to park. But they don't have a clue. The leaders don't have a clue. Why? Because the leaders get there and they get the good spots first. That's right. I discovered this in my preaching years. I was preaching. I didn't understand any of this. And I finished and I went into the lobby. And I was just warm, so I stepped outside to get some cool air before church dismissed. And, I mean, cars were everywhere. There's cars on the grass. Every place was, you know, full. And I didn't even realize we had no growth potential because you can't sit anyone in the auditorium that you can't park in a reasonable distance. Simple stuff like that basically goes unignored when there's no feedback system. All right? So you have to ask these diagnostic questions. It may be that. It may be something more. So it's important to look at. And let me explain to you also why when this happens, growth generally reverses itself. In fact, do you see in this case, as soon as the membership became greater than the assembly attendance, what happened to the assembly attendance? It started down. Well, what does this mean? Listen, if you cannot involve your own present membership, don't expect to be able to reach out and assimilate additional new members effectively. Does that make sense? Okay. Let me share with you the research on page 64. And again, I cannot offer a more effective predictor of growth or decline than the relationship of membership to assembly. But we also broke it down. We found some differences between church sizes. Single staff churches from 100 to 199, then the rest are multiple staff, 200 to 399, 400 to 699, and then huge 700 to 1,250. Here's what we found in terms of a growing and declining church, the percentage of the membership in the assembly. Let me show you if this is clear. 108%, this church, a single staff church, if they had 100 members as a growing church, they would average 108 in the assembly. A declining church would only average, they have 100 members, they would average 90 total attendance in the assembly. What's that clear? Now, notice, as churches get larger, they have a greater difficulty maintaining the higher percentage, you see. But nonetheless, in every case, the declining church had a significantly smaller percentage of their members actively in the assembly attendance. Do you see that? But let me share with you, because I've seen enough cases, no matter what size church you have, still the ideal goal is to have your membership less than your assembly attendance, or have your, rather, your assembly attendance should be at least greater than your membership. Large churches can do it as well as small churches, even though this is the average, okay? The next relationship you want to take a look at is the relationship between the assembly attendance and the percentage of that assembly attendance in Bible class. Actually, within this particular area of measurement, there are really two interpretive tools. And these tools offer some predictive insight. In other words, you've got a tool to raise those diagnostic questions, and these tools also are predictive. Because anytime you take your data, and if your data compares to a declining church, even though you're growing, it's a good chance you will not continue growing. Does that make sense? So, you have to use all of these variables to get a good measure of the health of a church. Again, the ideal situation should be that you would have a certain percentage of your assembly attendance in Bible class. Let me just go ahead and show you the results. You'll notice, on average, a growing church had around 76% of their assembly attendance in the Bible class program, while the declining had a significant lower percentage. And by the way, you can factor in small groups and use that as well as the Bible class. All right? You're not just limited. We just have the data from the Bible class, and traditionally we have used the Bible class as an assimilation tool. But now we're beginning to use other group strategies. So you could look at small groups and make some extrapolation to this data with small groups. Yes?
John, does your study have churches that only have Sunday morning Bible classes? Do they all have Sunday morning classes only?
Yes, they were Sunday morning only. And I do know some churches have Sunday school in the evening. Some churches don't have Sunday school. But these were traditional Churches of Christ with morning Sunday school programs. That's what data is most available to us. The next... Yes?
Can I back up?
Yes, go ahead.
The percentage of membership attending assembly...
No, this is the percentage of the assembly in the Bible class. In other words, if you had 100 people in the assembly, you would have 76 folks in Bible class for a growing model and only 69 folks in a declining model.
I'm going back further.
All right. All right, this is a different measure altogether.
Right there where your pencil was, we said 97% for a church of 299.
Yeah.
For a growing church, that's of the registered membership?
That's the active resident members.
And that's not their family.
That's not unbaptized individuals, not relatives, just the actual active resident baptized members only in that factor. Now, the book enables you to take your time and work through the clarity of definitions, because definitions are in there for each of these items. The other aspect that's really predictive in the Bible class goes like this. If you got your assembly attendance plateaued and your Bible class plateaued, if your Bible class begins to drop, or your participation in small groups, or any other kind of group activity begins to drop, you can be pretty sure that pretty soon your assembly will drop. And if one grows, the other tends to grow. Or I should say, if the Bible class or the group participation grows, the assembly tends to grow. All right? Let me show you the most extreme case I've ever seen, but this is at least good for illustration's sake. All right? This is an actual case. Notice the assembly attendance was skyrocketing while the Bible class attendance is bottoming out. Do y'all see that? What would you predict would happen next? The assembly is going to follow. And indeed, that was the case. Do you see that? And in fact, it's happening again. Do you see that? Do you see that it is happening again? Look, going up, going down. Major red flag. Something is wrong. You need to be asking diagnostically, what is going on in our program? Now, let me tell you why this is so important. You cannot build a healthy church just on a dynamic worship assembly. You must build a church on its infrastructure. That's the groups that make up the life of the church. Because what bonds people into a church is where they make meaningful spiritual relationships with other people in subgroups beyond the worship. When you have a weak infrastructure, the first wind of trouble floating through your church sends people flying. Attendance will just follow drop in a second. But if you have a good infrastructure where people are bonded together in meaningful relationships with one another, they can withstand a lot of difficulties that church might have to endure. All right? So this is an important tool for you to use. All right, I've introduced you, and I'm going to put you to work in just a minute. In essence, what I've done is hopefully given you what we call some church growth eyes. That's to be able to see some things that you never saw before. Not quite a paradigm shift, but, you know, it's close to it, I suppose. Real quick, tell me what you see. Don't think. Don't stare. Just tell me, what do you see? A clown. Everybody see a clown? All right. Now what do you see? Oh, you see something different. Oh, you see a circus. There you go. There's a tent. Here's a fellow on a unicycle. There's a dog balancing a ball. Here's a fellow in the ring. There's some horses jumping. Now, can you ever see the clown the same? Can't see the clown the same anymore. Not exactly, can you? Well, hopefully you're not going to look at data anymore the same. All right? Take what you've learned now. Because this church has some problems. Based on the relationship between the membership and the assembly, the assembly and the membership, the assembly and the Bible class. What is happening between the membership and the assembly? What is taking place there that's a red flag? In other words, a smaller and smaller percentage of their members are active in the assembly. Do you see that? Does everyone see that? Do you see it right here? See it getting more and more narrow? And as it got narrow, what happened to the assembly attendance? Huh? It drops. Interpretive tool? Why? And a predictor. All right, okay. Now notice, also, they're having some other big-time problems because now what's the relationship in terms of the assembly attendance and the Bible class? What is happening there? The percentage of people in the assembly attending the Bible class is dropping, so the lines are getting wider apart. Can you see that? Again, a major tool for someone to say, hey, what is going on? Let me introduce another one to you. This is looking at a little different data, but it is fascinating. You take a bar graph and you do annual growth rates. And this is a little different because you're just not looking at a giant sweep. You're going to look at 1 year at a time compared to the change in growth or decline from the year before. So here's an actual church. I'm going to share the data with you. If a church grows from 1 year to the next, and you could apply this to membership, baptisms, assembly attendance, whatever, but I always start with assembly attendance because that is the most sensitive variable in a church. It will tell you quicker what's going on than anything else. Others are very good, but the assembly attendance is the best. And so I always start with that, and I always use that first. If the assembly attendance increases, say if it's 100 and it grew 10%, how many people would it add? 10 people. Okay, so your bar graph would read 10%. All right. The next year, you would grow 10% again. How many would you add? You had 11, okay? Now, your bar graph's flat, but it's green. And as long as the bar is green, which way is the line graph going? It's going up. And then if it turns to red,
It's going to. I like to say, red is not good, but green is good. Green is good, red is not good. Okay? But this has an incredible tool to it. And let me introduce that to you. For example, take a look at this line graph. Let me show you, this will show you some things that line graphs will not show you. Here's a church over about a 5-year period seeing some very good growth. Does that look good? Goes from 175 up to 325 roughly. You like that growth? No problems there, right? Well, let's see. Look at the line graph, or rather the bar graph. Notice their momentum is declining. Anytime the bar graph drops, anytime you are not maintaining the percentage of growth, if it drops one time, it's a red flag. I'm telling you, one time is a red flag. Because what it's saying is, as a church, you are not applying yourself in ministry to sustain the numbers that God has given you. See, you can't do the same identical ministry from year to year to year as you expand in size and continue growing. As you get larger, you need additional staff. As you get larger, you need additional programming. As you get larger, you need additional facility space. As you get larger, you need a bigger budget. I mean, on and on it can go. All right? So, let me show you just how incredibly predictive this can be. Typically, a church can expect to grow 5 to 9%. If you're applying yourself in any shape, form, or fashion, 5 to 9% is the normal range, and you can handle that without any stress. Now, more than that, it gets to be stressful to manage 10, 15, 20%, but that wasn't my point. My point is, anytime it drops, what is that? That's a red flag. In other words, this church is receiving a warning from its instrument panel that things are not as well as they could be. And it predicts that what? Unless changed, it's going to continue. Do you see that? More warning. Tell me, how many years of warning has this church received that they have a problem? 1, 2, 3, 4. See, four years. How many years? 6 years. This church had 6 years to deal with issues, but it did not have a feedback system. It was driving without an instrument panel, and consequently, it lost a lot of members. And not until it blew up did they deal with it. So this is a very, very powerful tool if you use it. And monitor it on a regular basis. The next thing that a church must monitor, and we're just going to hit this briefly and move on, is its membership. God grants us oversight of a flock as elders, and I'm just going to say, elders, we need to keep up with the flock.
Back up one chart.
All right, backing up to annual growth rates.
I guess that's what that says also, but once you recognize it, the science and growth technique, you can change that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
The
good news is growth is possible for almost every church with just a minor exception or two. It's a matter of the choices that churches make. We'll give you those specific choices tomorrow. Unfortunately, it's... Here's Johnny. Here's Johnny. Yes. Yes, that's right. They're constantly diminishing in numbers, and this is a momentum thing. Decline or growth is a momentum issue, and you want to catch it early. Yeah. It's harder once the momentum gets in this condition. It's hard to turn it around. It can be done, but it is harder. The sooner you catch it, the better. Yeah, we'll tell you specific areas that...
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just goes down, period, yeah. Well, you start asking, you know... 0.5% might not be a significant red flag.
if it's still in the green and you're still in the 5-9% range, that's probably not too serious. But I would watch it carefully, and then I would look at other variables too to be sure that they're not sending flags as well as the areas we've looked at. All right, let's look at members. Baptizing members' children in green, they transfer in from other churches, and red is we baptize the unchurch. You need to keep clear distinctions in these categories because what it takes to reach an unchurched person and what it takes to reach a member's child is totally different ministry. So you need to separate your baptism so that you are fully aware of what is taking place in your ministry and its effects. They go out three ways, biological death, they transfer to other churches, and they become inactive. If you don't follow up, you don't know if they went to another church or they became inactive. Or if they died. That's true. If you're really not following up. If you're really not. But you would be surprised how many times I go into a church for diagnostic, I ask the data before I come, and they simply don't have it. So often, churches are having to go to their bulletins and read the bulletins to recall when people were baptized, when members, you know, came in. And, of course, that doesn't tell them when they left. The bulletin is totally silent about that. And I only get half a picture here, and I'm not able to do the analysis that's available because you can do a bar graph on each one of these is very insightful. In fact, when I did this one, this was a large church in the Dallas area all the way back in 85 when I joined the center, I saw a trend in membership that I've seen in almost every Church of Christ, almost every Church of Christ I've worked with in the past 13 years. If they gain a lot, how many do they lose? If they gain a little, how many do they lose? A little. Now, wait a minute. I said, if they at some time can gain, or rather lose just a little, why can't when they gain a lot, they lose a little? Because that would truly give growth. That would be excellent net growth. But the bottom line is, while we do a fair job of letting them in among us, we do a miserable job of closing the back door, and that is assimilating them among us. They're going out the back door as fast as they're coming in the front door. So this will give you some insight. Do you have a backdoor problem? And what kind of ministry might you get involved in to change this kind of condition? So this can be insightful. And then you need to know there's a real difference between a growing Church of Christ and a declining Church of Christ. A growing Church of Christ will average 18% new members each year, while a declining Church of Christ will only average about 10% a year. That can be insightful in terms of your data. A growing church will lose 13% but still have a net growth of 5, while a declining church loses 11 and has a net loss of 1. All right? So this can be helpful. Yes? How would you just repeat it? All right. In other words, a growing church will receive 18% new members a year. If it has 100 members, it'll receive 18 new people that year, and will lose 13. This is average of growing churches of Christ in the U.S. based on 111 church study. A declining church of 100 will only receive 10 new members. That basically says they are not effective as the growing church to attract new people. And they turn around and lose 11%. You lose some by natural mobility. But in many cases, it's not mobility that's causing the losses. It's ineffective ministry that's causing most of the losses. You can trim some of the losses. You can't trim all of the losses. Even these growing churches could do a better job in trimming some of the losses, especially the dropouts. And let me tell you, everyone doesn't have to be as mobile as you think. I know when people love a church with all their heart, they'll pass up a promotion to stay in that with that body of people. That's a fact. So there's a lot we can do to improve the loss percentage. I want to touch on demographics. I'm going to go real fast on this one simply because I'm going to cover it in detail tomorrow night because it's a major factor in growth or decline. Here's the demographic makeup, age-wise,
of a growing Church of Christ compared to a declining Church of Christ. And we have the categories of preteens, teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 64, and over 65. The best way I like to illustrate this is a growing church has a balance of about a third young people, a third young adults, and a third older adults. While a declining Church of Christ has an imbalance, and what basically happens because of the choices they make is they lose the 20 and 30-year-olds and they leave with their preteen kids. And they left with then an imbalance. We're going to discuss that in detail tomorrow. But the one other variable that I don't mention in Clear Choices that I clarify in measuring church growth is that you must factor in the community. For example, if you look at this church right here, you would say, that's imbalanced. But indeed, this is not an imbalanced church. This is a growing church. What is imbalanced is their community. Their community does not reflect the national average. Most communities do reflect the national average. And if you look carefully, what we observe is that a growing church, while it may not look balanced, it will have a greater percentage of 20s and 30s and preteens than the community. And that's the key variable. In other words, look at your community. If you have an imbalanced community, all you need to know, if you've got a healthy condition, do you have a greater percentage in 20s and 30s and preteens? If you have a smaller percentage, it says your ministry is not what it ought to be. We'll talk about that in depth tomorrow. Another thing a growing church is able to do better than a declining church is reach never married singles. One of the things a growing church is able to do compared to a declining church is reach never married singles. Blue is the growing churches, red is the declining churches according to size. In every case, the growing church reaches more unmarried singles. Growing churches learn how to handle diversity. That's an absolute key. If you cannot have tolerance, if you cannot be non-judgmental and yet hold firm to your theological beliefs, you cannot reach people that have this broad diversity. Folks, I've gone into churches with my spouse, and I've gone into churches, in the same churches, with my spouse, and the way I was treated was night and day indifference. When I went with my spouse, I was least acknowledged. But going in as a single, you're literally treated almost like a leper. Try it out. We need to learn how to counter those kinds of reactions that we have to new people, especially to singles. Did you realize by the year 2000, over 50% of all adults will be single? By the year 2000, 50% of all adults will be single. Right now, 47% of all adults are single. By the year 2000, 50% will be single. Now, that is never married singles and all other singles. Includes elderly singles, young singles, the whole thing. All right. Just a few more minutes. Hang in there because I'm to the last area, but yet the most startling finding of all. I came across some information that really shook me concerning large churches. So I'm going to share with you that, and it's presented in chapter 7, trends in the U.S. some research that I discovered. One of the trends, and I'm going to relate it to the startling information that I found, that'll come last. So how do you keep you awake, you know, hold you in suspense till I get there. But the trend in America is towards larger sized churches. Here's one study verifying that. Here's three different traditions, Presbyterian, Southern Baptist, and Reformed, their average size church in 1906 and their average church in 1990. You can see a significant increase in the size, the average size. Do you see that? All right, I'll talk about Church of Christ in a minute, but this is a trend. People are gravitating toward the larger size ranges of churches. We're also into a mega church age. A friend of mine, John Vaughn, has devoted his life, and I'm going to mention him several times. John Vaughn studies mega churches. This is churches over 2,000 plus in attendance in the U.S. and the world. His research gives us only 12 mega churches in 1970 in the U.S. Only 12. Now, this is not Church of Christ. This is all churches. In 1980, there were 100. In 1990, there are 310. And now, Every 2 weeks, a new church breaks over 2,000 in attendance. Every 2 weeks. We are in the mega church age. Churches of Christ have participated in this trend towards largeness to some degree, but not to a dramatic degree. Here's a change in the number of churches according to size from 1980 to 1990. Now, obviously, when you plant new churches, they're going to be in the smaller size. So you have the larger number smaller size. But percentage increase-wise, notice the 1,000 and up had the greatest increase. Now, that is easy to happen simply because of the smaller numbers, but still it reflects the trend toward larger size churches. This will be insightful. I want to break down the sizes and the people who attend the different sizes. Here's the size range. Here's the percentage of churches. And here's the percentage of people who attend of our membership. Note this. 48% of all of our members attend the top 15% of the churches that we have. People are attracted to the larger churches because of a variety of reasons. One, because of the ministry options that they provide for them and their children. They're attracted because the larger number gives them a greater opportunity to connect relationally with someone they will like and enjoy and feel good in fellowship with. And you can go on and on. Obviously, larger churches tend to have more quality throughout their ministry. Mm-hmm. I think I did. No. I had the additions and the percentage change. And by the way, it's all in the book. Everything is in the book. I promise you.
47% of the people are attending those. Well, before you put that yellow one away, 47% of the people are attending the larger churches.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the percentage of larger churches total?
Yeah, I'm fixing to go there. I'm fixing to show you that one. All right? But I just wanted you to see here that the top 15% size-wise, and that puts, you know, in the 200 range up, is where most members attend. But what I want you to know is Churches of Christ have not participated in the megachurch trend. While we are tending toward enjoying and preferring larger churches, we have not participated in the megachurch age, which is a concern to me. Here is what you ask. Here are the actual attendance sizes and the actual number of churches in those ranges for Churches of Christ. There are major barriers that are organizational, psychological barriers. Notice that 85% of all of our churches never get beyond 200 because it takes a whole new mindset and a whole new way of operating to break beyond 200. Well, there are other barriers. I want you to notice also that a barrier begins right around 700 or so and goes up to, notice, about 1,250. This is called the 800 barrier or the 1,000 barrier. The number is not exact because various locations will impact the size. But if you take a look at the 14 churches above 1,200, if you remove the ones that were dominated by college campus ministry, you would have not more than a handful that have broken the 1,000 barrier without college student help. Now, I've wrestled with this. I've talked to John Vaughn about this. I said, John, look, you know this because other church traditions have this particular phenomenon. Why is this the case? Here's what he said. He said, John, I've studied these mega churches. And one thing they have in common, they are mission-driven. In other words, these large churches are absolutely committed to reaching the world, the lost, starting at home with the gospel of Christ. If any of you have read The Purpose-Driven Church by Rick Warren, fascinating comment he says in there, and this is a church, it's a mega church of multiple thousands in attendance, multiple thousands in membership. He says the number one stat that he's most proud of is 80% of the members of that church were baptized in that church. Now I take you to what is somewhat shocking and is a major concern to me in terms of this large church trend and what is happening among churches of Christ. I'm going to share with you a stat that shows you how many conversion baptisms a growing and declining church has for the different sizes. And it's based on how many baptisms they have per 100 members. I want to just show this first. Notice the single staff, 5.2 to 2.5. That's the growing, that's the declining. In other words, a growing church baptizes twice as many as a declining. Do you see that? And do you notice in a large and in a very large, still, in every case, the growing church baptizes more than the declining, and this is statistically significant in the difference. Even though as it gets larger, you see a slight drop, but nonetheless, still, the growing church baptizes more. Only when you turn to the huge churches, 700 to 1,250, that's the churches facing the thousand barrier, do you find the data contradicted. Because not only are the huge churches not baptizing many, notice that the growing actually baptizes less than the declining. That's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
I'm 14 churches, perhaps.
No, 112.
No, but this is the huge churches.
Yeah, of the huge churches.
14, you showed that were above 2,000.
No. This is the ones between 700 and 1,250, which there's quite a few.
Okay.
All right. These are churches stuck in what I call the thousand barrier. Okay, or what others are calling the thousand barrier. And we've tried to look and answer why. Here's one of the reasons. Here's what Mac Lynn has to say. Over the past few decades, Churches of Christ expanded only minimally. No groundswell appears for evangelism or for new church planting anywhere. In spite of a tremendous amount of energy spent in nurturing activity, neither a passion nor a strategy for domestic outreach is evident, in spite of a significant interest in evangelistic gatherings. Let me explain to you what happens in these huge churches. These huge churches are attracting people from other congregations, and they have so many people in their faith. They simply do not know how to assimilate them well, and they do not have the commitment to evangelistic outreach because they're totally involved with taking care of the ones that are there. Now, the reason they inevitably stop growing, the majority of them, is that they become introverted. They begin to look inward. And what we discovered is that introverted churches, not only will they not evangelize, they won't even take the time to effectively assimilate the new transfer growth that's showing up. You can't even get them to let the new people in their network of relationships. And so, therefore, they are stuck in this large size, unable to move into the megachurch trend. Based on John's research and what others have said and observed about the megachurch phenomenon, page 105 lists four characteristics of barrier-breaking churches. I don't care if you want to break out of 200 or you want to break out of 1,000. You have to deal with these four. It's not the only four, but you must deal with these four. These are the things that tend to stop a church in these barriers. Number one, maximum facility use. You must make room for people. One of the main reasons churches don't go beyond 200 is buildings are built for 200. And when they fill it up, they won't do anything with it. I've gone into a church. They asked me to come in. They said, John, tell us how to grow. I looked at it. They were wall-to-wall people. I said, it's real simple. You just got to have to go to multiple worship services. I want to tell you, they turned on me as if I was Satan incarnate. What? Go to two worship services? Well, if I do that, I couldn't see my friends. Verbatim, what they said. I said, you need to go to John 10 and 23 and discover what God is seeking. God is seeking true worshipers. What's more important? We make space, even at the cost of our comfort zone, or is it better to just stay comfortable and let the people go? Let the worshipers just dissipate. Number one, you got to make the space. Number two, you have to have managed membership here. That's that infrastructure. That is, you must find a place to help people build relationships that are meaningful and spiritually related. Number three, membership involvement. When you get beyond 200, the minister and a few hard workers can't do it. It takes major involvement in the membership of the congregation. And finally, number four, mission-driven. I don't care how large a church gets, it must never forget its ultimate mission. We are called to make disciples. We must learn the difference between being fishers of men and keepers of the aquarium. That is the basic problem. So I hope this introduction, while it's not complete, I sincerely hope that it'll give you some insight. I'll leave you this one analogy and we'll finish. In Scripture, the church is compared to a human body, where Christ is the head and we're the body. That's a rich analogy, isn't it? Well, let me draw from that. Take your body. If you're not feeling well, you can go to the doctor, and the doctor will take various tests that produce numerical values. And that doctor can read those numerical values alone without asking you a question and determine if you're in good health or poor health, just based on those numerical values. What are some of them that they gather? Weight, temperature, blood pressure, white cell count, red cell count, cholesterol. I mean, and on. I mean, that doesn't even touch the end of the garden. Likewise, there are data areas in which you can gather, which you can graph, and which you have now the tools to interpret, to use as a feedback system to deal with things before they get out of hand, and to deal proactively with planning and moving the kingdom forward and keeping it focused on the mission which we're called to accomplish. That's the keys. So I encourage you, I hope you'll come back tomorrow. I'll share with you the four most significant areas that predict growth or decline for Church Christ based on the study, Clear Choices for Churches. And then the last session that I will present is on the not-so-easy areas to measure, that spiritual renewal and its relationship to church growth. So, to me, that's probably as exciting of a topic that we can discuss, but we'll wrap it up with that. Okay, any questions before we break? Pushing the limit here? Okay, great, folks. Have a good night.